So you'll hear the two voices here. It doesn't matter which is which. They're both very delightful guys. David Zucker and Jim Abrams, along with Jerry Zucker, wrote Surely You Can't Be Serious. They are the writers and directors. They are the creators of that ridiculous 1980 movie Airplane. And as we spoke to them before the show yesterday, we had a chance to sit down and for about a half an hour talk. I'll play for you part of that interview just now. And what you and I don't know is that the inspiration for the movie, really the template almost, was a black and white sort of disaster movie called Zero Hour. And they had videotaped some stuff overnight. And the next morning when they go back to watch what was on the video, they used to make fun of old time commercials that would run late at night. Suddenly they see this old movie and they went, oh, we got to make fun of this.
One morning we cleared off the machine and there was this movie playing called Zero Hour with a plot where a guy with PTSD goes up on a plane and there's food poisoning and the pilots go unconscious and this guy has to fly down the plane. And we thought, boy, it was a very serious movie, very unintentionally funny already. And so we dubbed it.
There was a line in Zero Hour that said, we need to find someone back there who not only can fly this plane, but who didn't have fish for dinner. And we just
that movie that you're referencing informed your movie, not just because some of the plot lines you could mimic, but because the actors were so wooden, right? I mean, you told Leslie Nielsen and Lloyd Bridges and Peter Graves, we want you, Robert Stack, all of these, you know, legendary crime straight up actor guys. We're going to be in a silly movie, but we want you to be like this.
Well, we told them, don't play it straight. Play it like you don't know that you're in a comedy. And I think that was the key for these guys. And so, and they got it. You know, they all did a fine job of being, you know, Lloyd Bridges and Robert Stack and Leslie Nielsen. So
yeah, but I mean, even that is kind of a, who the hell are you to ask Lloyd Bridges to do something like that, and that they would get it?
Professional actors, you know, if they sign on, they're in for a penny, in for a pound, and they are willing to trust the director, or otherwise they just don't sign on.
Well, why did they?
Well, they didn't all initially. When Peter Graves read the script, he threw the script across the room and said, this is the worst piece of trash I've ever read. And it's in the worst taste I've ever seen. So our executive producer, Howard Koch, who knew Peter Graves, Howard was of that same age, and he had Peter Graves in to meet with us. I'm sure he thought we were these drugged out weirdos, you know, writing, you know, have you ever seen a grown man naked? And have you ever, been in the gymnasium or whatever he said. So we must have convinced them that we somehow knew what we were doing, although we were first-time directors and there were three of us. So he signed on.
Actually, on the radio the other day, shared the anecdote with our listeners about how you got Jabbar to get into the film.
Yeah, you know, I think we offered him $30,000.
Yeah.
And he declined it. And so Howard Koch, our producer, called his agent and said, you know, why is he turning it down? And the agent said, well, he wants to buy this antique Oriental rug, and I keep a pretty close watch on his finances. And so this rug cost $35,000, and if he got $5,000 more, he would do it. We thought, gee, this is the sneakiest agent thing ever. So we gave him the 35 and he did it. But a few months later, there was an article on Kareem in Time magazine, and it showed Kareem with this expensive $35,000 Oriental rug.
If the template for the movie was Zero Hour, I always thought it was a spoof of the movie Airport. Did Airport came before Airplane, right?
Yeah, Airplane came out in 1980, and it had been preceded by a whole decade of these idiotic disaster movies. It was Airport and Airport 75 and Airport 77 and the Poseidon Adventure and just a whole bunch of
Towering
them.
Inferno, was that beforehand as well?
I think so, yeah. We were just positioned, just luckily, in the absolute right place at the right time with the right kind of tone.
And there was another movie called Crash Landing, which was another one of those black and white 1950s movie where we actually got to the line, surely you can't be serious. That's actually from Crash Landing.
We're running out of time.
Surely there must be something you can do.
I'm doing everything I can. And stop calling me Shirley.
Boy, yeah. Oh boy, you owe somebody a debt of gratitude there because...
No kidding.
Oh, yeah,
no
they gave kidding. Us all the straight lines. Like, you know, there's a guy, one of the characters in Zero Hour says, looks like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking. And
really?
We just added all the other lines.
We say in the book, it's like somebody gave us a beautiful Christmas tree and all we had to do is hang the ornaments on it.
I don't know if my respect for you guys has gone up because you were clever enough to steal this stuff or if it's gone down.
When we first gave the script to John Landis to read, he said, guys, this isn't parody, this is plagiarism. So what we're getting, we talk about this in the book.
Well, I don't know what the most quoted line is. Billy, have you ever been to a Turkish prison? That scene, though, where the pilot is talking to the little boy.
Roger, Denver.
We have a visitor.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Captain Over, Mr. Murdoch, and Mr. Basta. This is Joey Hammond.
Well, hi, Joey.
Come on up here. You can see better.
Joey, we have something here for our special visitors. Would you like to have it?
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Sure. You ever been in a cockpit before?
No, sir. I've never been up in a plane before.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Do you want me to check the weather, Clarence?
No, why don't you take care of it? Joey, do you ever hang around the gymnasium?
We better get back now, Joey.
No, Joey can stay here for a while if he'd like.
Does that scene get made today? Does the script change today? It's still funny, but I think we laugh today knowing the context of the era in which it was made. How does that scene get filmed today, guys?
Yeah.
I think it may get film, but, you know, it would be R-rated. I think they would slap a higher letter on us. You know, it wouldn't be PG like Airplane was.
I don't think it would be filmed. One of, again, among our many breaks is the people at Paramount were filmmakers first and executives second. So they knew how to make, they respected creativity more. Today, most of the executives are out of business school and tuned into, you know, whatever the modern sensibilities are and might be less likely to greenlight that show. Again, we were lucky to have Eisner and Katzenberg and the folks at Paramount.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's funny as hell, but...
Well, and the other thing is the Peter Graves was perfect. If we had picked a comedian to play that part, it would have been awful. Or if Peter Graves had kind of winked while he was doing those lines, it would have been terrible. But he played it just perfectly.
Joey, you like movies about gladiators?
And there were actually times while we were filming the scene where he'd say, no, now look away from Joey and stuff like that. So I think his performance is like perfect. And that's a real key to pulling those lines off.
And it was the hardest one to do, really, for any of the actors, scene. Yeah.
I'm glad you're talking about that and mention that. And you do obviously write about that in the book. And I think we take that scene or some of those kind of shticky jokes for granted. But actually, there was that scene in particular, you had him do it a lot. Now look here. Now say the line this way. It almost sounded like you patched it together. And again, I'm glad that Peter Graves was willing to go out on a limb like that and take direction from you, Knuckle Chucks, and and that somebody had the vision to believe that that would work. Because you're right. If he's trying to be funny or if he's winking like, hey, I'm a pedophile, isn't this funny? No, it's not. Somehow it is in this film.
Well, you know, I think we were very specific in our directions, as Jim was alluding to. And, you know, that may have increased Peter's trust. I've never really thought about that, why he actually trusted
us. You know, I think maybe part of it is, you know, we weren't making fun of pedophilia. We were making fun of B movies and how seriously actors in B movies mm-hmm. play their parts.
Yeah.
And the image of, really the image of pilot.
Sure. Sure, he said in 2023, but at the time, did you realize that? Like, was that the conceit? But don't worry, folks, we're not making fun of Hindus and Muslims and Jewish people and black right. people, and we are making fun of movies that talk about those things. That's exactly. That's a little bit of jiu-jitsu that, again, if you don't do it right, it fails miserably. And yet there's Barbara yeah. Billingsley translating jive. Oh, my God.
Right. Well, we went for the opposite way, you know, the whitest lady on the planet. And she was perfect.
Can I get you something?
Butter laying me to the bone, jacking me up. Tighten me.
I'm sorry. I don't understand.
Cutty say can't hang.
Oh, stewardess, I speak jive.
Oh, good.
He said that he's in great pain and he wants to know if you can help him.
All right, would you tell him to just relax and I'll be back as soon as I can with some medicine.
Just hang loose, blood. She's gonna catch up on the rebound out of med time.
What it is, big mama. My mama raised no dummies. I duck her rap.
Cut me some slack, Jack. Chomp don't wanna help. Chomp don't get the help.
Say can't hang, say seven up.
Jive ass dude don't got no brains in him.
Yeah.
And in fact, those guys, Al White and Norman Gibbs, who played the jive guys, they not only made up their own dialogue, they wrote her dialogue and taught her how to do it.
Oh. Yeah, because I wondered how you guys figured out all of that stuff.
No. We knew nothing. We just knew mo, show, fo, po. We didn't know anything.
There is Jim and there is David. Hey, guys, this is John Williams in Chicago. Hello.
Hi. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm really good, thanks, and thanks for giving us some of your time. I've really enjoyed the book. We all enjoyed the movie, but the book is a revelation, so well done, guys.
How nice of you to say. Thank you.
Revelation seems yeah. kind of lofty for a movie like this, but let's get rolling now, shall we, guys? We are recording. Let's have a conversation here. We'll play back as much of it as we can on the radio. And
okay.
So first of all, David and Jim, thanks for giving us some of your time. Welcome to WGN and Chicago, and congratulations, not only for the movie, but also for this really fun book.
Thank you.
Is the jingle still WGN?
In fact, it is. Well, we have various versions of that, but, you know, my boss considers himself a jingle connoisseur. I'm not making this up. He's really into the jingles and the imaging, so that you even mention that is now going to make you my new best friend.
Jim, how did you know that? I know the Milwaukee WISN or
I listen to Chicago stations a lot.
Wow. Well, that's right. You guys are Wisconsinites, right? I mean, at least that's where you met, at the University of Wisconsin at Madison. Are you both?
Jim was a lot more sophisticated than I was, so he listened to the Chicago station.
Maybe that was it.
We grew up in Milwaukee together. Our dad, Jerry and David's dad, my dad were business partners. So we go back a long way.
Our sisters were college roommates. It was actually Abrahams and Zucker Real Estate, A to Z in real estate.
Wow. Well, I wonder when here's these successful, I presume, businessmen, families, and then their kids say, I want to make a silly movie. Did they encourage you all in your endeavors, or were they a little taken aback by it?
My family was always very encouraging, and my mom was an actress, and so she got that, and although I'm sure she would have preferred Dr. Zucker or, you know, something like that. But and my dad was a real estate developer, and he in fact found our first videotape equipment.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So
my dad had passed when we went into business together, but my mom, when we left for California from Milwaukee to open our theater, encouraged me to sublet my apartment instead of let it go in case things didn't work out.
Yeah, well.
So Jim, so did you? Did you sublet it?
No, no.
Oh, because I, you know, it's not in the book, so I'm still learning stuff.
Well, it is funny how much you guys were unable to earth for us. I mean, just the viewers of the movie, like the fact that Pete Rose was originally going to be the pilot that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar became. I don't know how much of a revelation to the cinema world that is. I had no idea. And I can't imagine Pete Rose, because Jabbar was so good for that.
Right. And our dialogue for Pete Rose was just, "No, I'm Roger Murdoch. I'm an airline pilot." And that was it. The kid didn't go on. But with Kareem, we could invent a little controversy. And there was. And of course,
we didn't know at the time. I mean, the reason we didn't use Rose is because we filmed during the summer and he was playing baseball. But if we had only known what was going on behind the scenes with him, we could have written pages and pages of stuff for him to deny.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
The kid could have said, "Mike, I think you're the greatest, but my dad says you have a gambling addiction. Yeah.
And sure, like, I bet you we don't land on time or something like that. I mean,
your wife is in room 203 and your girlfriend is room 303.
Okay, wait, before we just sort of reveal some of the on-screen and behind-the-scene things, how did the movie come to be? How is it that, and you had already had some success with one movie, but how is it that you wise guys from Wisconsin get a studio to back you, you get the money, you get the stars? I know the movie was only made for $3.5 million, but 1980, $3.5 million was something. How is it that the movie happened?
Well, back in 1975, we were still running the Kentucky Fried Theater. And we used to do spoofs of commercials on stage on video. And so we would leave the videotape recorder on all night, and then in the morning clear it off to get, you know, the late night commercials, which were often more stupid than the daytime ones for some reason. But one morning we cleared off the machine, and there was this movie playing called Zero Hour, with a plot where a guy with PTSD goes up on a plane, and there's food poisoning, and the pilots, go unconscious, and this guy has to fly down the plane. And we thought, boy, it was a very serious movie, very, very unintentionally funny already. And so we redubbed these.
There was a line in Zero Hour that said, "We need to find someone back there who not only can fly this plane, but who didn't have fish for dinner." And we just copied. Yeah. And then actually, Zero Hour also came with a wonderful love story that we sort of grafted into Airplane also. And at the beginning of the love story, the girl says to the boy, "I can't live with a man I don't respect." And of course, for many years, people assumed David had written that line based on any number of his relationships, but it turns out that was actually from Zero Hour.
Yeah, but before you go on with that, Jim, I mean, that whole thing would be another interview of me, personally, I think.
But that movie that you're referencing informed your movie, not just because some of the plot lines you could mimic, but because the actors were so wooden, right? I mean, you told Leslie Nielsen and Lloyd Bridges and Peter Graves, "We want you," Robert Stack, all of these, you know, legendary crime straight up actor guys, "We're going to be in a silly movie, but we want you to be like this. Don't try and be funny. Try and be as wooden as they were in that other movie," right?
Well, we told them, don't play it straight. Play it like you don't know that you're in a comedy. And I think that was the key for these guys. And so, and they got it. You know, they all did a fine job of, you know, being, you know, Lloyd Bridges and Robert Stack and Leslie Nielsen. So
yeah, but I mean, even that is kind of a, who the hell are you to ask Lloyd Bridges
right,
to do something like that, and that they would get it, that they would even appreciate the conceit. I'm impressed with the balls you guys had.
Well, and it wasn't just that, you know. You have to treat professional actors, you know, if they sign on, they're in for a penny, in for a pound, and they are willing to trust the director, or otherwise they just don't sign on.
Well, why did they?
Well, they didn't all initially. When Peter Graves read the script, he threw the script across the room and said, "This is the worst piece of trash I've ever read, and it's in the worst taste I've ever seen." So our executive producer, Howard Koch, who knew Peter Graves, Howard was of that same age, and he had Peter Graves in to meet with us. And somehow we must have been, you know, I'm sure he thought we were these drugged out weirdos, you know, writing, you know, "Have you ever seen a grown man naked? And have you ever, you know, been in the gymnasium," or whatever he said. So I think we must have convinced him that we somehow knew what we were doing, although we were first time directors and there were three of us. So he signed on.
And Lloyd Bridges, how did you get Lloyd Bridges? Lloyd Bridges' kids liked the idea that their dad would be in this, right, Bo and Jeff?
They
recommended. They helped convince them.
So you were able to sort of cobble together this cast. I actually, on the radio the other day, shared the anecdote with our listeners about how you got Jabbar to get into the film. Could one of you just tell that story?
You know, I think we offered him $30,000,
yeah,
and he declined it. And so Howard Koch, our producer, called his agent and said, you know, "Why is he turning it down?" And the agent said, "Well, he wants to buy this antique Oriental rug, and I keep a pretty close watch on his finances. And so this rug cost $35,000, and if he got $5,000 more, he would do it." And so we thought, gee, this is the sneakiest agent thing ever. So we gave him the $35,000, and he did it. But I guess a few months later, there was an article on Kareem in Time magazine, and it showed Kareem with this expensive $35,000 Oriental rug.
Yeah. If the template for the movie was Zero Hour, I always thought it was a spoof of the movie Airport. Did Airport came before Airplane, right?
Airport did. And actually, I took a lot in the book about how lucky we were and how things fell into place for us. You know, there were a bunch of setbacks. But actually, when we made Airplane came out in 1980, and it had been preceded by a whole decade of these idiotic disaster movies. It was Airport and Airport 75 and Airport 77 and the Poseidon Adventure and just a whole bunch of
Towering
stuff.
Inferno, so, was that beforehand as well?
I think so, yeah. And so, you know, we were just positioned just luckily in the absolute right place at the right time with the right kind of tone.
So when you sat down to... go ahead, finish that thought. Keep going.
We didn't use only Zero Hour. We drew material from Airport 75. Airport, you know, the little girl needing a heart transplant, the nun singing to her. And there was another movie called Crash Landing, which was another one of those black and white 1950s movie where we actually got to the line, "Surely you can't be serious." That's actually from Crash Landing.
Boy, you owe somebody a debt of gratitude there, because...
No kidding.
They gave us all the straight lines. Like, you know, there's a guy, one of the characters in Zero Hour says, looks like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking. And we just added all the other stuff. Really? All the other lines.
Oh my gosh!
I think we say in the book, it's like somebody gave us a beautiful Christmas tree, and all we had to do is hang the, you know, our jokes on it, hang the ornaments on it.
I don't know if my respect for you guys has gone up because you were clever enough to steal this stuff, or if it's gone down.
Oh, no, absolutely. When, you know, when, we gave
you know what we used to do. a long time ago, I used to do this thing where I'd show planes, you know, talking to classes and stuff, and show scenes from Zero Hour intercut with the scenes from Airplane. And I was always afraid when the lights came up at the end of that screening that people will be like throwing apples and stuff at me and vegetables because it's so clear. You know, we did very little, but we did it right.
Yeah. But
well, you know, when we first gave the script to John Landis to read, he said, guys, this isn't parody. This is plagiarism. So what we talk about this in the book. We actually bought the rights to Zero Hour from whatever studio owned it. And it was cheap because no one cared about this old movie.
Well, but you had an inkling that you were onto something because of the dailies. Talk a little bit about how the dailies were being attended.
Well, you know, we wanted to direct it, and we insisted that we direct the movie. And so Paramount finally gave in, and they said, you could direct it with the proviso that, you know, they could put Howard Koch on as executive producer, and they could fire us after 2 weeks. And, you know, we were fine with being fired. And then, but the first day's shooting, our line producer, John Davison, very wisely chose that scene where Bob Hayes says, Shirley, you can't be serious. And Leslie says, I am serious and don't call me Shirley. And that was the first day's daily. So everyone cracked up. The room was full of studio executives who were nervous about it. But once they saw that, they saw, oh, okay, this movie's going to work. And I'm just surprised that they didn't already know that. I guess they greenlit the movie kind of half-believing in it. But Jeff Katzenberg called us up that day and said, don't worry, we're not going to fire you.
But you also described...
And that's another thing where we have to give credit to, and David mentioned John Davison. I think the reason he picked filming that scene in the cockpit on the first day of shooting was not because he knew it was a great joke or thought it was the funniest or anything like that. It's just that when you're shooting in the cockpit of a plane, you can't screw it up. I mean, there's only one or two places to put the camera, and you know, there's nobody moving around. And so it was like the most fundamental thing to shoot.
Yeah,
And it just turned out that it had.
Not a lot of blocking there, not a lot of extra lighting.
Not a lot.
Just sit,
not
talk, be funny. But it turned out to be a great running gag throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the most quoted line is from that movie, but boy, that's got to be up there. Billy, have you ever been to a Turkish prison? Gladiator movies, those lines, you know, keep coming up again and again. But you guys also in the book describe the chore that watching the dailies is. I don't know anything about the movie business. For movie executives, you got to just watch an hour of film, you said, and know that some of these scenes might make the cut. But as the buzz was generated at the studio and on the set, more and more people, it was like standing room only to watch the dailies of the movie.
Yeah, they have to add two more screening rooms for all the people who wanted to pack into our dailies. And I think Barry Diller, who is the chairman of Paramount, he is quoted in the book. He said he usually hated dailies, never liked it. He was bored. But with Airplane, he was there every day. So that was nice to hear.
Just talk briefly about the writing of the movie, guys. Was it a one long drunken weekend? Was it a drawn out process? How did the movie get scripted?
Well, we started, as David said earlier, when we found the movie Zero Hour, we just lucked into it because we taped it one night. And then what we would do every day we started writing in like 73 or 74. The movie came out in 1980. And in between, we did make Kentucky Fried Movie. But basically, every day we would go to an office and drink coffee, like all writers do, and talk about the news until we ran out of news, and then talk about sports until we ran out of sports, and then we start writing. And that's what we did. And there's not literally, I don't think, a word in that script that was written when we weren't all just sitting around the table writing together. And basically, we got a videotape of Zero Hour and a videotape of lots of other disaster movies, and we'd play them. And then we'd think, oh, wouldn't it be funny if the pilot said, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
And we had never written a movie before. So that, I think
right.
the book is very inspiring because we didn't know what we were doing. It's plain that we, you know, there was a huge learning curve and we learned on the job. And that's really how the process went. And then, you know, the first draft of Airplane was, you know, very crude, and we really needed to go through the process of Kentucky Fried Movie. And we learned from John Landis how to direct. So we were ready after that to direct Airplane.
That scene, though, where the pilot is talking to the little boy, does that scene get made today? Does the script change today? It's still funny, but I think we laugh today knowing the context of the era in which it was made. How does that scene get filmed today, guys?
Yeah.
I think it may get filmed, but, you know, it would be R-rated. I think they would slap a higher, you know, letter on us. You know, it wouldn't be PG like Airplane was.
I don't think it would be filmed. One of, again, among our many breaks is the people at Paramount were filmmakers first and executives second. So they knew how to make, they respected creativity more. And so I think that's, I think today most of the executives are out of business school and tuned into, you know, whatever the modern sensibilities are, and might be less likely to greenlight that show today. But again, we were lucky to have Eisner and Katzenberg and the folks at Paramount.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's not just one joke. I mean, it's a series of lines. It's a scene within the movie, or a recurring scene in the movie, but it's funny as hell. But
well, and the other thing is, you know, if you think, and I think we write about this in the book too, that if the Peter Graves was perfect, and if we had picked a comedian to play that part, it would have been awful. Or if Peter Graves had kind of winked while he was doing those lines, it would have been terrible. But he played it just perfectly. And there were actually times in the while we were filming the scene where he'd say, no, now look away from Joey and stuff like that. So I think his performance is like perfect, and that's a real key to pulling those lines off.
And it was the hardest one to do, really, for any of the actors. Yeah. That scene.
I'm glad you're talking about that and mention that. And you do obviously write about that in the book. And I think we take that scene or some of those kind of shticky jokes for granted. But actually, there was that scene in particular, you had him do it a lot. Now look here. Now say the line this way. It almost sounded like you patched it together. And again, I'm glad that Peter Graves was willing to go out on a limb like that and take direction from you, Knuckle Chucks, and and that somebody had the vision to believe that that would work. Because you're right. If he's trying to be funny, or if he's winking like, hey, I'm a pedophile, isn't this funny? No, it's not. Somehow it is in this film.
Well, you know, I think we were very specific in our directions, as Jim was alluding to. And, you know, that may have increased Peter's trust. I've never really thought about that, why he actually trusted
us. I think maybe part of it is, you know, we weren't making fun of pedophilia. We were making fun of B movies and how seriously actors in B movies mm-hmm. play their parts.
Yeah.
And the image of, really the image of the pilot.
Sure, he said in 2023. But at the time, did you realize that? Like, was that the conceit? But don't worry, folks. We're not making fun of Hindus and Muslims and Jewish people and black right. people. And we are making fun of movies that talk about those things. That's exactly. That's a little bit of jiu-jitsu that, again, if you don't do it right, it fails miserably. And yet there's Barbara Billingsley translating Jive. Oh, my God. How fun was that?
Right. Well, we went for the opposite way, you know, the whitest lady on the planet, and she was perfect.
Yeah.
And in fact, those guys, Al White and Norman Gibbs, who played the Jive guys, they not only made up their own dialogue, they wrote her dialogue and taught her how to do it.
Oh. Yeah, because I wondered how you guys figured out all of that stuff.
No. We knew nothing. We just knew mo, show, fo, po. We didn't know anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I confess this, that on days today when I'm not feeling good about myself,
yeah,
I'll tune in on YouTube. There are a bunch of videos where people watch Airplane for the first time.
Oh, wow. Oh, nice.
And it's really fun for me. Again, it just makes me feel so good about myself. But those jokes hold up as well today as they did back then. And they hold up well today with black audiences, with female audiences, with, you know, the whole gamut of audiences laugh at those jokes as hard today as they did in 1980.
Jim always sends me these videos of people watching Airplane for the first time. And, you know, I already feel good about myself, and it makes me feel even better.
Why wouldn't it? It's funny because that is a bit of a phenomenon that happened, like, during Game of Thrones. People would sometimes put a camera on people watching it. And then when the Red Wedding happens, people are shocked, and or football games, and you would have the video of that. But I didn't know that Airplane would be that's quite a compliment to how not record
breaking. How bored everybody is.
No. There was another question I was going to ask you guys about as we were going down. Oh yeah, the movie's rated PG, and I think it would be very tempting to make an R-rated movie again today. In fact, PG movies maybe don't. Isn't it better today to have a movie rated R in terms of box office or credibility than to be rated PG?
It depends on what audience they're going for. Sometimes it doesn't even matter if a movie needs to be R. It's just, and if it's a good movie, it does great.
Okay, but let me put it this way. Were you guys definitively trying to stay under R? Because, you know, I don't remember any F-bombs or the S-word or GD. Are those?
It wasn't trying to stay under a certain rating. It's just because we didn't think the comedy depended on, you know, curse words or...
There is the joke where we say, am I allowed to swear or no?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Where we say, it's going to hit the fan.
Yes. Right. Yes.
But that was necessary, yeah.
And
it was very necessary.
Well, what with their actually hitting the fan.
That's an interesting point you bring up, Jim, because, you know, when there's a point where Robert Hayes, you know, the engine burns out and he doesn't say he says rats, because we didn't want to do an unnecessary curse word.
Well, and there's hardly any nudity, but there is a famous nude scene in this show as well.
There was a recent box office survey that was done that said roughly 62% of the revenue from Airplane was generated from that shot.
A scene where there's this chaos that breaks out on the plane. You see all kinds of people running around. Oh, my God, it's a terrible disaster. And here goes a lady, and she doesn't have any top on. And I go, was that? What's going on there? No explanation for it. Completely random.
Such a non sequitur. I showed the Airplane to my son when he was 2 years old. And all he could talk about was the booby. And so after that, you know, we started watching softcore porn together. You know, he thought it's food.
Well, why wouldn't you?
You know, there's a lot we talk about the casting in the book and how rigorous the casting was. But we spent, I think, most hours auditioning people for the boob shot.
See, that's not... That is so, that's such a 1980s comment. You can't even say that today.
No.
The people that auditioned for the movie that didn't make it, do I have the list right? Sigourney Weaver, Shelley Long, David Letterman, or did they audition to be in the movie?
Yes. I mean, Letterman did not want to be in it from the get-go, but we kind of were the driving force behind that. Because we just were such fans of his stand-up routine, which we would see on Sunset Boulevard at the comedy at the time. So, you know, we got him to come in, and he came in and read. He read, and he just cracked us up. And not just from the reading, but he would say other just ad-lib funny stuff. And then he came in to screen test, and, you know, he was uncomfortable. And so I think Jerry called him up to tell him, he didn't get the role, and he was completely relieved.
He relieved.
Didn't get the role.
But it's funny.
He said he loved the movie, and he loved it even more because he wasn't in it.
Well, but he was outside the mold. He was a funny, sarcastic guy, and you didn't want comedy, or you didn't want people being comedic. The comedy was in how they were playing it straight. What role was he going to have in the movie?
Striker.
So he would have been the star, yeah. He would have been
The main guy.
Yeah,
and he as brilliant as he is, he was utterly uncomfortable being an actor. He just has to be David Letterman.
And then Sigourney Weaver, would she have had the role of the
Elaine,
yeah. Shelley Long as well.
She came in completely dressed as a 1940s era stewardess. With the hat and the hairdo and everything, and I think she probably read quite well, but she didn't want to say the line. I remember how I used to sit on your face and wriggle. So that
she didn't want to blow up the automatic pilot.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, let's just finish on that. Isn't that funny how these people are checking out for these reasons? All of them legitimate. I mean, these are people with careers or early in their careers, and they don't want to be doing oral sex to a pilot. I don't blame them for that. I mean, how do you live that down?
Yeah.
But I wonder, have any of these people come back to you afterwards?
Oh, David? But, you know, Julie Haggerty, who wound up being absolutely the perfect person to play that part, talked about that. And she said, you know, I'm just blowing up a balloon. I mean, it's not that big a deal.
Right, right.
And she went on to have a wonderful career, and she's, of course, literally perfect in the movie.
Were there any scenes that you didn't do, or were there any scenes you would have liked to have done, but you either couldn't afford it, or you thought, yeah, that's crossing a line?
I don't recall anything we didn't do that we wanted to do. If we wanted to do, you know, shit hitting the fan, we did that. Or, you know, I take it black like my men, we did that. I mean, we didn't.
Yeah, that's right.
We just made us laugh in the room.
The first cut of Airplane was an hour and 50 or an hour and 45 minutes long. And the final cut is 87 minutes with the end credits. So there was a bunch of stuff in there that we filmed that just didn't work, that we just cut.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the scenes with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar were difficult in that he was game. He knew that his image could have used a little lightening up, so he'll be in this funny movie. And he seemed to play along nicely, but he wasn't able to, and we all know how brilliant he is, but he didn't memorize the lines or couldn't deliver the lines. So you kind of had to do line by line with him, right?
Well, fortunately, the scene called for him to be facing forward in the cockpit, and so we just put cue cards in front of him, and he was fine reading the lines.
Which actually played beautifully into the fact that we were making fun of a professional actor who's trying, a professional guy in sports who is trying to act. And so the fact that you can see him kind of reading the lines, it just enhances the whole deal.
Well, and in an era when athletes would play non-athletes in movies, like an O.J. Simpson, say, it was pretty meta of you to have the kid go, wait, you're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah, right. And, you know, that that came from Zero Hour, too, because the pilot in Zero Hour was a guy named Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch, who played for the University of Wisconsin football and then played for the L.A. Rams and then wound up being athletic director at the University of Wisconsin. And he was the pilot in Zero Hour, and as great a running back as he was, he clearly couldn't act. And what do we say? He elevated acting to
wooden.
Mediocre.
Yeah, something like that.
Wooden,
I think, is the one you used in the book.
And but he was the inspiration for casting an athlete in the movie and then calling him out in the middle of the movie.
And you guys didn't think, all right,
the
if there's
pilot.
A... Go ahead. Yeah, he was the pilot.
He was the pilot in Zero Hour, and his co-pilot was even worse. We thought they must have stuck the production accountant in there as the co-pilot.
Yeah, you have a picture of the two of them, the pilot and co-pilot, and they look pretty. They even look wooden in the picture in the scene.
And they're actually in Zero Hour when the little boy comes into the cockpit. He does offer him a toy plane, and he does say, "Have you ever been in a cockpit before?"
We didn't have many original ideas.
Yeah, you did. But here's what you didn't think of. So then the stewardess, Julie Haggerty, is going to have to pull the pilot, Kareem Jabbar, after he gets poisoned with the fish down the aisle. Well, he's 7'2". She's a pepper shaker. She can't handle him. And so they say action, and she goes, there will be no action. So you had to put him on a little gurney and have him wheeled along, right?
Yeah,
it didn't occur to us during the writing that would be a tough thing.
7-2. Finally, the final scene. That was kind of a big deal for you all, and you make reference to the cost of the final scene when the plane crashes through, right?
That's at the beginning.
Well, yeah.
Oh, is that at the beginning?
The beginning of the movie.
It was the last thing we filmed.
Okay, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
It was one take. You know, six cameras. I think two of the cameras didn't work, but it didn't matter. That's why we had six cameras. So, and a lot of people notice only on the third or fourth viewing of the movie that one of the passengers in the waiting room who runs for her life throws her baby up in the air.
Why not?
Trying to get away.
I'll have to go back and look for that. Okay, guys, last question. What's your favorite scene or line or moment from the movie that I see on the screen, not behind the scenes? What are you laughing at or the most proud of?
I always laugh every time when the stewardess says, "I've never been so scared." I'm 26 and not married. And then the other lady comes in and says, "I'm scared too, but at least I have a husband." So that makes me laugh every time. And it was funny 43 years ago, and it'll be funny 43 years from now.
Yeah. Mine kind of varies almost from week to week. And especially since we've been working on the book and been thinking about the movie so much. I think last week I was riding along and I started laughing about the line where Julie says to Leslie, the stewardess says to the doctor, "A hospital, what is it?" And he says, it's one thing that we made the pun, you know, about what is it. But then his answer is, "It's a big building with patients." Who would say that? I mean, to describe a hospital, a big building.
Why did we choose that?
No, that's funny you mentioned that, because we play on my radio show here in Chicago a little mashup of some of those jokes where it's this sort of kind of double entendre like that. And if you just splice those together, that's 90 seconds of joy, and I love that whole kind of joke, and it works.
Yes.
It works, and the book is a lot of revelation and a lot of fun, and you guys are too. This was more time than we originally asked for, but fellas, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Now I'm going to go watch the movie again five times. And you know what else? I'm also going to go watch that stupid other movie. I got to go back now and watch Zero Hour.
You know what? Yeah. You can. There's stuff online. This is really more like a therapy session for me, because there's another thing I watch online is where they intercut scenes from Zero Hour and Airplane,
and
you can see them. Just Google it.
All right, that's what I'm doing this month, fellas. Congratulations. Airplane, more Airplane, now more Airplane, is Airplane 6? Is there anything else that you guys are going to, have you been inspired to do it again?
No. We want to do other things. Onward and upward.
Amen to that. Okay, fellas. Thanks for your time today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. It's fun.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, guys. That's it. We'll cut it right there and play much of that on WGN in Chicago this week.
WGN.
Okay.